You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere on God's magnificent planet. All you have to do is go on the web and type in Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. It comes right up. Or you can also ask Alexa to play Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Today, of course, is our show is going to be fun, unscripted, very educational, and quite informative. My co-host, Ellen O'Neill, is not here today, so we're going to have to depend on the goodness of everybody who's in the studio. So, without further ado, I'm going to introduce our guest. I've got a lot of people calling to be on the show, to be a part of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, whether they want to speak about a nonprofit, some people want to speak about financial literacy, some folks want to talk about why we should vote, others want to call in and speak about a book that they had written on, about. And so we give everyone a platform on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, knowing very well that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility, and we like to play nice. So on our show, if you would like to book a segment, you could contact me or Ellen, and we will book a segment. With the help of God, we've got wonderful sponsors, and we are booked right up until the end of August. And I'm grateful for the friends and the guests and the sponsors that keep Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on air. And with that, I'm going to tell our listeners right here a little bit about a show today. My neighbor next door, Diane Baumert Moyak is here. Moyak is here. And, you know, for listeners who are tuning in for the first time to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, I pick people out and we make friends with each other and we become confident and we become great citizens and we give back not just to the state of Florida and a community, but to ourselves. And all that happens through communications. And I'm grateful that Diane is here because she's going to talk a little bit later about something that's going on in our community. And it's like a proposed rezoning that certain folks want to do and develop a piece of land and put a whole bunch of townhouses. And we're saying that our community just can't support that. The infrastructure is not there. And so Diane and a lot of folks in our neighborhood are working very hard on that, and she'll be on second segment. Our first segment, my other great neighbor next door, Deborah Thompson, introduced me to her wonderful nephew, Dan Ciccarelli. And Dan is a candidate for Florida House District 31, and he is here to talk a little bit about his campaign. And his segment is sponsored, and my good friend Sharon is going to tell us about his campaign.
This segment is an in-kind donation for Daniel Ciccarelli for Florida House of Representatives, District 31.
Right. And as you know, getting involved in politics is a lot. You give up so much of yourself while you're running for office. And Dan, I am grateful that you're here to speak about your campaign.
Thank you for having me.
So give us that aha moment when you decided that you were going to run for office.
So I gave a speech on ICE reform after reading the entirety of federal immigration law, and I was disheartened by what I had read because it proved that none of the laws had changed to create the situation that we find ourselves in today, and the responsibility for that lies with every single administration who let those laws stand the way they're written today. and they're old. They're from the 50s. They're a patchwork mess. And when I read them, I mean, the speech I wrote was almost 15 minutes long. And the crux of it was I was angry with the Democratic Party for not having their words and their morals and their values align with their actions. And they would say one thing and do another. And the next day, I was in Walmart and I was grocery shopping, and a lady came up to me, and I have never seen her again, and she pushed her walker into my foot, and she grabbed me by the bicep, and she just pulled me down and said, "When are you going to run for office?" And I had never considered it before. I've been involved with the party for a long time, trying to make changes at the local level and trying to get their actions to align with what they say, and suddenly the onus was on me. And so I reached out to a couple of friends who are involved with the Democratic Party here in Brevard and asked them if I was insane for running. And they said, "You are absolutely not. You're a great candidate. If you decide to run, you need to do it." And a couple of weeks later, I got to sit down with David Jolly for about an hour and talk about real policy and the work that can be done to actually help people from a legislative perspective, because he's got a lot of legislative experience. And I went, "Oh, there is a real path here for me to run, get elected, and to make real positive change."
Right.
And so I couldn't not get involved.
So, you know, at the end of the day, every human being, no matter where we live on planet Earth, we want to be loved. We want to be appreciated. We want good security,
yes,
law enforcement. We want food on the table. And we just want to live, because most of us, you know, your 20s, you're flying high. In your 30s, you're just soaring. It's like, "Look at me."
Yeah.
In your 40s, you're like cruising, like life couldn't be better. You're making money, your children are home, whatever. In your 50s, you're like, "Wow, look what I've accomplished." In your 60s, like us, you start coming down. And by your 70s, you're like, if you don't know what life is about, something wrong with you. Because by the 80s, you're done, right?
Right.
So it is a vacation on planet Earth. And most people, once you get married and you have children, the dynamics shift. People want to talk about education for their kids.
Yes.
Parents want health care. People want an affordable wage with great benefits.
Yes.
And people want to, they've got to live. And so we talked a little bit earlier about having programs to incentivize folks, like internships, and you made a really great point. Talk a little bit about the affordability crisis here in the state of Florida and Brevard and elsewhere.
So Florida, I believe it's the third most expensive state to live in the nation per the numbers, and that translates to almost half. I think it's about 48% of people in our state live paycheck to paycheck. And so what that means for those people is that as things get more expensive, as they have for the last 2 years, it's not that they're just living paycheck to paycheck and they're just getting by. It's that they're having to decide what not to get. You know, it's not a higher quality of product. It's, am I going to get this thing at all? Right? Am I going to skimp on my hygiene items? Am I going to pay my water bill or my electric bill? Am I going to fix my car, or am I going to buy a new shirt so I can keep going to work? And most of the time, those people, especially, I mean, all those people qualify for some kind of benefit. And because of the way benefits are managed in our state, where the state designates a pool of money to those benefits, hires a private company to run the process to apply to those benefits, and then either pays that company based off of the money that they save in the pool or by number of forms processed, it creates an incentive structure where those companies are incentivized to keep people from getting the benefits that they are entitled to by living in Florida. So it's very hard to get the help that you need that actually helps and works for single parents and paycheck people. And I mean, that's half of the people in our state,
right?
You know,
and you know, we hear people talk about SNAP benefits and Section 8, and some folks say, well, it's a lot of people live on the government's dole, so to speak,
right?
But I do believe that all of us in the studio present here, we believe in able-bodied men and women working.
Yes.
And so that's like something that the Democratic Party does not message properly. No one should be receiving benefits if they're able to work.
Right.
There are help wanted signs everywhere. But there are people that fall in hard times. There are people that do need the assistance. And we want to help those folks. What do you say to people that say to you, well, the Democratic Party just give handouts? How do you combat that? Because I don't think we just give handouts. I think it's income-based. It's based on if you have children and if they should be in public schools, if you have a home to live in, if the children have food to eat. How do you address that? Because there is a problem when some folks think that's what our party stands for.
Right. And I hear those people, and I understand usually the angle they come from is one of fiscal responsibility. But the most fiscal responsible thing that we can do is to help people who need the benefits and to be generous with them. Because the people who get those benefits, more often than not, they get off of them within 9 months. The grand majority, I believe it's about 60% of people who get on SNAP benefits, who get assistive benefits with housing or with cell phones or with job placement programs or unemployment insurance, they get off those benefits and they get back to work. Everybody gets hurt. Everybody gets sick. We all need help sometimes, even if we are able-bodied and healthy. And if we're not, that doesn't mean we don't deserve help, right? Personally, I would rather help one person that doesn't need it than not help 100 people who do.
Yeah, because you're not sure who needs the assistance.
Exactly.
Right? I try to tell myself that I am fiscally responsible and socially compassionate. And with that socially compassionate side of me, I do believe that every child needs a quality public education.
Yes.
Mr. Dan Ciccarelli, who's a candidate for Florida House District 31, talk to our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends about your education stance.
So I feel like my education stance matches a majority of the people in the state. And I can evidence that by, in the last legislative session, the Senate passed a bill unanimously to completely fund and fix the voucher loophole that completely fund public schools and fix the voucher loophole that's currently open in schools. So in the last fiscal year, the average school in Florida lost 24% of its funding. And the idea was that funding would go to private schools to fund students leaving public schools through schools of choice. And the average school only lost 3% of its students. So they're facing huge fiscal problems, and it's been identified. The data is real. We know this is happening. The Senate passes a unanimous fix for it, and the House won't even bring it to the floor. So I agree with the Senate. We need to perfectly fund public schools. We have a duty in our state constitution, and the federal constitution also mentions education. We are supposed to provide education to our children. That is a fundamental part of why government exists. And I'm completely fine with fairly placed schools of choice with, you know, select schools like Edgewood, all these different programs to get students different qualities of education based off of what they want and their needs and their achievement. That's good. And we should have educational diversification. But you can't do, you know, you can't fund a school of choice at expense of a public school.
Right. In other words, it doesn't matter where a student lives. All zip codes matter.
All zip codes matter. Everybody
right.
Matters.
And you know what's sad is that we live in a time when people are so judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
And there are schools and there are kids and students that have a community. And some of those community schools are in jeopardy because of schools of choice.
Yes.
And pretty soon, you know, everybody talks about, you know, making America great again. But at the same time, if you have a community school with a broken sidewalk, tell somebody so the kid don't fall when they're walking to school. If you go to community school and you see the computers are not working in the lab, those kids matter too. So say something, right? So the question is, why do people leave a community school? And there's so many factors with parent involvement, the condition of the school, the disrepair that the schools are in, and the community around which people live. Why can't we all come together as Americans and say, your zip code matters just like mine?
Well, why schools are in disrepair and falling apart is one thing. Why communities can't come together is because people are afraid of each other. It's because culture war politics and the divisiveness and the unkindness that have been running the country for the last 10, 12 years, they have trained all of us to react through fear. So why can't we fund our schools? It's because we've been told that that's the wrong way to do education. And then we get motivated to vote for people who believe that's the wrong thing to do through fear. And I've fallen for fear before. Let he who is without sin cast the first stone there. But we've got to be able to talk to our neighbors. We've got to be able to reach out. And if there's a broken sidewalk, maybe we go tell somebody. Maybe we go get our neighbor and we walk down there and we fix it ourselves. You know? And part of that is we have to be honest and we have to be vulnerable. We have to take risks to connect with the people around us. I mean, social cohesion and connection is a recently tracked metric, but it is the lowest it's ever been. People have less friends. People are getting married older if they get married at all. People have less kids. Parents don't see their kids as much.
And technology
Everyone's
plays
so disconnected.
A big part in that. So many of our kids, you see parents lined up in front of the schools and they're on their phones.
Yes.
And hey, your kid is going to be coming out any second. How about if you get out of the car, park the car, walk and go meet another parent and
right.
talk about the PTA, talk about PTO. I don't know what they're calling now, but we do have a disconnect in the United States. And I do feel you're absolutely correct. Technology is one part. And just that people are so fearful of each other. And it's like, you shouldn't be. Have that neighborhood potluck. Have that community school. Have a fair. Do things that your children and parents could do together. Now, you went to home. You home were homeschooled.
Yeah, I was homeschooled until I was 18. And then I went to Eastern Florida State right down the street from here. But when I was homeschooled, I went to church every Sunday, usually every Wednesday and sometimes every Saturday, too, depending on the church we were going to. I was involved in two different homeschool groups a week. I mean, I was out in my community involved with my friends all the time. And if I didn't have a day where I was doing something, I was riding my bike 5 miles to my best friend's house so we could hang out all day. I mean, I was always on the move.
Talking about riding a bike, you don't even see children riding bikes anymore.
Nobody goes anywhere anymore.
You know, but, right? It's so sad what has happened. So, Dan Cicerelli, let's say we would like for you to get elected into the State House in Florida.
Right.
There's a lot of people that want to be involved in decision-making for their community.
Yes.
How do you plan to get the residents involved in decision-making?
So, the same way I want to get the residents involved is the same way that I want to build community, because you can't legislate people making friends, right? I want to have cookouts and do community events and just be involved myself. And instead of being somebody who goes to an event, I want to plan events, which is scary because sometimes people don't show up. But on a leadership side, leadership itself has to set the tone that percolates down through all of society, right? So if I am a leader who is open to connection and wants to work with people and wants people to be happy, healthy, and wealthy, I'm going to make that happen.
Oh, I like that.
And everybody's
going to
happy, happy, healthy, and wealthy.
That
I came up with
slogan.
That one myself.
HHH. What do you think, Hallie?
It's right there.
That works.
Happy, healthy, and...
wealthy.
Well, oh my, I love it.
So leadership attitude affects how people act. Good leaders in their attitudes, just you naturally change culture by being a good leader. It's very important to me. But I want to be available to people. I want to do town halls at least once a quarter. This area has seriously lacked in-person town halls. And I have called all of my elected representatives multiple times on various bills, and I have never so much as gotten anyone to pick up the phone, not an intern, and sometimes their messaging boxes are full. The ability of people to petition their government.
So you want to have an open door policy.
Open door,
you'd be,
yes.
Approachable.
Approachable.
So if someone would come up to you, let's say you're in an elevator, and somebody says, I want to hear your 30-second elevator speech, your three top priorities, what would you say to them?
So I would caveat it immediately by going, remember, as a House of Representatives person, I only have 2 years to get this done and 2 8-week legislative sessions. I got to be snappy. Priority number one for me is getting healthcare access restored to North Brevard. So we have a dearth of healthcare problems here. We were federally recognized as a critically severe area in need of physicians before Wusthof closed, and now Wusthof is closed. So my goal is to get more physicians here, not necessarily more hospitals, but to expand the hospital we are building on Merritt Island so it can be a trauma center with more physicians. We need pediatric ortho. We need a trauma center that can handle strokes completely instead of having to stabilize people and fly them to Holmes or to Orlando. We need to be able to have babies in North Brevard again because we don't have an OB ward that can actually do labor and delivery other than Parrish or Holmes. They're building some stuff for that in Viera, but they broke ground a few days ago. That's a long time coming, and the hospital on Merritt Island is almost done. So we'll see. Genie in a bottle, wish number one, better healthcare. And that's like an immediate need. Long term, it's affordability. The housing insurance market in Florida has failed. It's not going to correct itself. We have insurers leaving the market, and rates are skyrocketing every single year, time and time and time again, because of specifically storm coverage and flood coverage. The state could divert 2% of our tourism tax revenue into a sovereign wealth fund, and we'd need to protect it from being raided into the general fund during the legislative session with special gates there, or else this won't work. And that money would make it so that insurance could come back into this market, lower insurance rates, estimated 40-60% lowering of house and car insurance rates. And that's an immediate, huge, probably $3,000 to $4,000 a year savings for the average homeowner tomorrow. That's the single biggest thing we can do. That's lower rent, it's lower mortgages, it's lower costs at condos, it's just everything.
And catch the crooks that are going around giving cars that they want to give you a new roof when you don't need a new roof.
Yes, they're
like, dude,
charging insurance.
We don't need a new roof. Stop coming here with your nonsense. Right? We all see those people and hear them. Oh, we're in your area. We want to get, why? I don't want to be a cheat.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be a crook.
Yep.
Because for everyone that says yes when they don't need it, they're making it bad for everybody else.
Right.
Right? So what do you say? You know, we have people in our country, in Brevard, in the state of Florida, all over the United States. And it doesn't matter if you are registered as a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent. But we're all human beings. At the end of the day, people want to put food on the table.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if you're making $15 an hour or $100 an hour or $200 an hour. You still have to pay rent.
Yep.
You still have to pay your utilities. Some people have to decide between food on the table or tires on the car. And those folks need a voice. They need us to be advocates for them.
Yes.
What do you say when people say that, you know, the business community is all concerned about regulations? The business community is concerned about expansion. But yet still, you have people at the bottom who can't afford to live. What do you say to people that are all concerned about regulations and business, but their sisters, brothers, their nephews, their cousins, there are people in their family that is barely making it, but they're telling you, hey, I have to open a big business, but I'm concerned about regulations. I mean, it's like kind of like, where is the humanity side of us, right?
So when we talk about business, we have to be careful. So I'm specifically on regulation. My background is I was a life safety professional, and the regulations in life safety are written in people's blood. And so every regulation usually has a good reason attached to it. And that's not always the case. And when that's not the case, there needs to be a system to address that, absolutely. But I'm not so sure it's the responsibility, in my belief, is that it's not the responsibility of the state to set a ceiling on what businesses can do. Businesses should be set in a box where there's a floor on how much they can pay people, and they can go up from there as much as they want, right? As long as they're not hurting anybody, why should we restrict them?
Right, and now, I believe there should be anybody who has a business, they should be told that, hey, make as much money as you want.
Mm-hmm.
Just pay your fair share in taxes.
Exactly.
Right?
If everybody
if you want to make $1 billion, this is the United States of America, and no one should put the brakes on that.
Yes.
So, but if you have people working for you, have a little compassion and empathy that
yes.
When everyone goes through the exit doors and they head to their cars, the person who is your secretary or the person who is cleaning the floors or the person who is helping in the cafeteria, whatever, they have to go home and pay bills too.
Yes.
So let's talk about affordability. Just make it affordable that you shouldn't go home and take your wife and children out for a $200 meal.
Right.
But your coworker is struggling to pay $6 just to buy a loaf of bread, some eggs, and a gallon of milk.
You know,
it's not right.
The state's responsibility in regulating business should be to give businesses incentives to take care of their employees, right? So you don't pay all of your employees a living wage per our math. Well, we're going to give you no tax rebates, right? You get this box, we're going to give you a discount on costs. We will work with you if you will provide for the people in our state. That's what I think the state should do. And we need to diversify our economy in Florida. And we shouldn't do that with penalties. We should do that with carrots, right? It should be, here's an incentive to build a new industry. Here's an incentive to stabilize an industry that's already tumultuous. Here's an incentive to make it so that we can do tourism dollars when there's a hurricane coming or something.
Yeah, because if you give the businesses incentives, it trickles down to the employees.
Yes.
I think it does.
We should tie incentives directly to employee compensation. You know, if you want to be a good business in Florida, you have to make Florida a good place to live.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about the health insurance crisis. I mean, Medicaid expansion. Yes. Are there some people that should not be on Medicaid? Yes. Are you crooked and lying on a form to get in? If you are doing that, we don't want to be your friend. It is for the people that actually need it. So how do we get more politicians to understand that by the time people pay their rent, do car repairs, put food on the table, send children to school, they do need health care.
Yes.
And those are the people that need Medicaid. I mean, let alone dental care. Half of the country can't afford dental care. But we're talking just straight Medicaid expansion for the state of Florida.
I mean, our governor, I'm trying to be polite, refused Medicaid expansion for political reasons. And what that did was directly led to the closing of two hospitals in our community with no open replacements. Right, that there's a one-to-one point. Boost off closed because they couldn't get money from the state to renovate that building. I was on the engineering study that closed that hospital. I know what was wrong with it. Had a lot of stuff wrong with it. It needed to be closed or completely renovated, and they couldn't get the money, so they closed it. And there's nothing going back there. That land's getting donated back to the city of Rockledge. The new hospital campus Orlando Health is building in Vieira is supposed to replace it, but that's in Vieira. It doesn't serve North Brevard. It's, you know, and it's good that we'll have specialists that are 30 or 40 minutes away instead of an hour away. But it's not a replacement for what we lost. And Ron DeSantis destroyed the hospital I was born in because he's obstinate. That money was free. So personally, this is probably my most radical position. I'm a data guy. I'm a number guy. If you look at what the average American spends on on healthcare versus what they get in any Western country in the world, we pay way more for way less. It's just... the math is there. It's proven. And our wait times in our hospitals are longer than the 29 next best healthcare countries in the world, France being the best example of the most prime healthcare in the world. And they're all socialized, right? So personally, I would be very supportive of anything that will make healthcare more affordable and work on prior authorization, work on, you know, maybe breaking up the vertical integration of healthcare so insurance companies aren't telling doctors what to charge and paying them and setting the prices that way.
So kind of like a Medicare for all kind
of
thing.
Yeah, but ultimately, Medicare for all is where we should go.
Yeah,
it's the most fiscally responsible option.
We have friends that when they turn 65, they're so happy.
Yeah.
They're happy because they're getting Medicare. Of course, that's a whole different subject because it's Medicare A, B, C, D, all different durable equipment and stuff. But wouldn't it be wonderful if a dad came to you and said, guess what? I'm 25 and I have health insurance for my family and we're all helping. I mean, I don't want to go to bed knowing that I have a refrigerator full of food, but somebody, you know, up the street is starving.
Right.
I don't think that's fair. I don't think God will like me for that. I mean, I don't think my creator who lives in my heart sees that. But really quick, because we're going to have to go, the segment is such a good one. You know, everybody talks here about the Indian River Lagoon.
Yes.
And that is a sticking point for me because we lived in Tortoise Island on the river and we saw the river turned black and murky and we've got friends with their boats and we've seen what happened. And you oftentimes you see politicians go there and take a photograph on the Indian River Lagoon. Some of them have hats on and boots and everything because they want to show what they're doing. What do you think should happen with the Indian River Lagoon and all the stuff that's going on right now?
So I have been to a lot of the citizen oversight committees. I have plunged the depths of their budget. I had people tell me that the program wasn't transparent and that it wasn't working and the data wasn't there. And so I went to the program to see if that was true. And it works. This program is incredible. And it's a model nationally for what government programs should be as far as data transparency and funding allocation. Is the data pretty? No, we can solve that problem later, but the data's there. 2016 was one of the worst marine life kill years in Lagoon ever. It was the peak of the darkness times for our lagoon, and that was when we passed our half-cent sales tax in Brevard to restore it. And since then, we have gone, it got worse and it got worse, and then it started to get better. And we are back to, I believe it's 2015 levels of seagrass. We're starting to see things come back. Now, it's only been 10 years, and this program is back up for vote. And every single person, regardless of whether or not you vote for me, you need to vote yes on the half-cent sales tax. It took 35 years to restore the Chesapeake Bay. We're only 10 years into our program, and we've already got better results than they did 10 years into theirs. We can do it. We just have to keep going.
Yeah, well, you know, many people participate in politics because they feel like it's their fundamental responsibility. You feel like it is your right to vote. Tell our listeners what your website is and then the importance of voting by mail or in person or early voting.
So my website is ciccarelliforflorida.com. If you want to sign up as a volunteer or give me a donation because you like the way I sound, you can go there and get that done. And I would really appreciate it. But if you're wondering if voting is worth it, if you're wondering if you should vote, if your vote matters, think of it like this. Voting is a form of speech. And if you don't speak, you will never be heard. And there are so many people in this country, I didn't vote or I wasn't registered to vote, would have won every single presidential election for the last 30 years. You know, if you're mad about the way things are and you didn't vote, you didn't speak. You've got to stand up and speak. If you're not at the table, you're on the menu, right? You've got to get involved.
And I don't want to be eaten up like that.
Right?
But, you know, for our listeners who are tuning in, our friend Dan Cicerelli, his neighbor, Deborah, is my good friend, and she introduced me to him so he can be on our show. And, you know, getting involved in politics allows all of us to have great influence and help our community to make great decisions. And if you have a cause and you want to be an advocate for it, I would recommend get involved in politics. Whether you run for office or you get on an advisory board or you start your own campaign, but, you know, do something. Because if every American say, I don't want to get involved in politics, what is going to happen to our nation? What is going to happen to the greatest country on earth, the United States? And I think people need to wake up and say, if you don't like the way the sidewalk is, start a campaign for good sidewalks.
Yeah.
If you don't like the idea that your community school is not going to be there anymore, find out what's happening, but do something, right?
Always.
So, Dan, give us your website one more time, if you don't mind.
That's CicereliForFlorida.com.
And this segment was sponsored. And there's my friend Sharon. She's getting a chance to chat on the radio.
This segment is an in-kind donation for Daniel Cicerelli, Florida House of Representatives, District 31.
And we'll be right back with our second segment. Stay tuned for Diana Barmer-Moyak. She's going to be on the second. I'm so used to just calling her Diane. Anyway, she'll be on the second segment, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Cena and Friends.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super saving sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads. 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee. I'm so energized. Our show is heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, FM 100.7, and online everywhere on God's magnificent planet. All you have to do is type in WWBC, you hit Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and it's right there. You could also ask my good friend Alexa, who I chat with all the time. So our first segment was with Dan Cirelli, and our second segment is with my neighbor, Diane Boynick. I screwed it up again. Diane Bormert Moynick.
Yes, thank you, Sita. Yes.
Yeah. And she is lovely. We've known each other for over 6 or 7 years, and I just know her by Diane, so I'm just going to talk to Diane. I am so amazed at what you are doing and what you have done to bring all our neighbors together in Lake Washington, Florida, to try and get people involved in a developer that wants to develop some townhouses on a piece of property that affects all of us. Because we know that our little community, Lake Washington, does not support such actions. So talk to us a little bit about what made you get involved in the Lake Washington neighborhood to say, hey, let's take a look at what you are planning to build in our neighborhood.
Well, first, Sita, thank you so much for having me on your show. You do such amazing work. And the prior segment is just the perfect transition to talk about what we're doing today. About leadership, about getting involved, about lifting our voices. So thank you for that. On June 3rd, I was on my computer looking at my social media, and on the Nextdoor app, I saw a rezoning notice for a property down the road from my home, about half a mile from my home at 1800 Turtle Mound Road. And the developer, who is a former NFL football player from Washington State, who's recently acquired a variety of properties in Brevard County, is applying to rezone 14.37 acres of land, which is currently zoned RR1, which is Rural Residential 1, which is 1 acre properties. And that's really the primary characteristic of the Lake Washington community. And he was looking to change the classification of the property and increase the density from potentially 14 one-acre homes to 86 potentially homes or townhouses or multiple dwellings. Or, you know, we're not even sure what the site plan looks like, but he came in, purchased the property, didn't really do the due diligence on the property because it's a level 3 recharge aquifer zone. It's a FEMA Class A flood zone. It is zoned RR1 for one-acre homes. So he came in and applied to rezone the property, and we're fighting it.
Yeah, and here's the thing. This guy doesn't even live in our area.
Well, I think he's a new resident to Brevard. I think he lives in the area. But his company...
But not Lake Washington.
Correct, not Lake Washington. Because I think if he lived in Lake Washington and was a part of our amazing, magical community, as we call it, he would realize that it's not about making a quick buck. It's about being a part of our amazing community. And, you know, we're not opposed to a proper development of that land in its current zoning state. So if he came in and said, I'd like to develop the land in its current state, we would work with him.
Right.
But he's decided that he wants to change the character of our community, and we will not allow that to happen.
Right. So now I've never seen a petition drive take off in such a speedy way. How did you get so many neighbors? Within a week, you had, 3,000?
Yes.
Signatures?
Yes.
Because I've seen people who are advocating for clean air, water, solar, financial literacy stuff, but never so quickly. How did you mobilize so many people? So, well, I know Deborah, our neighbor Deborah, helped Dan's auntie. But how did you do it so quickly? Because this is a issue that's near and dear to so many of us.
Great question. So first of all, I've got a lot of experience. I've been in public relations for 39 years. I worked in local government on Long Island as a public information officer and a citizen's advocate. And I was a press secretary in Nassau County. So I understand how government works. I understand what happens when a rezoning application is here. I know that there are incredibly powerful technology tools. So I just leveraged change.org, which is a great website for petitions. And it's free, and it is supported through donations. And we've had incredible contributions from petition signers. Many people have stepped up and gave a few dollars.
Yeah, I think I put some in there, too.
Thank you so much, Sita. But we were able, we've probably had about $1,300 in donations go to the change.org because, you know, no one helping is making any profit from this effort.
Well,
it's all about engaging our community. You know, we've got a fabulous core team of neighbors walking the streets and knocking on doors and delivering signs. And I had people pick up the signs at my house yesterday. I had like a rotating delivery out of my garage.
And everybody wants to be Diane Baumert-Mobic's friends. Everybody, you Google your name and all these articles are coming up now. I'm like, I know her. But I think if somebody took a ride down Lake Washington Road, especially during the hours of 4 to 6, and see the traffic congestion that we have at that stop sign on Turtle Mound Road, they would understand why the neighbors are against a developer putting so many houses in that piece of property. Now, talk to us about the septic tank and the sewer, because I see that Mayor Paul Alfrey got involved, and he's on our side. He's saying, wait a minute, let's take a look at how this is going to burden the city of Melbourne.
Absolutely. So the city of Melbourne has the jurisdictional responsibility, even though the property is located in Brevard County. But the city of Melbourne has the governmental responsibility for the infrastructure, right? So that would be providing city water to the site. And then the septics, and ideally those septic systems would be the new ones to support the Indian River Lagoon effort, right, to protect our waters. So because the parcel of land is located where it is, and the city has to weigh in, the city has no capacity. They don't have the capacity to deliver what the developer is asking for. And that's why they've come out publicly and strongly. Mayor Paul Alfrey, Vice Mayor Julie Kennedy, who attended the Zoning Board of Appeals meeting on June 15th, they've come out strongly to say, we don't support the change of zone.
Right. And Sharon lives in that neighborhood, too. And I know we met with Deborah, you and I. Do you have anything to add to this conversation about where you live? Do you guys have any congestion out in your area?
Yes, I totally agree. There is a lot of congestion in the morning and in the afternoons. And to allow such development to move forward will definitely put a lot of pressure on that in that intersection. And congestion, and it's already congested as it is. So there really is no room to have such a large
development.
Coming into our neighborhood.
So what is? I see that the city, the developer, hired a couple of attorneys locally to fight. What is their argument? Are they looking at this from the standpoint of affordability? Or are they looking at it at a standpoint that we need to bring more houses in that area for whatever reason? What is their reasoning for wanting to change the zoning the way it is and put all these houses?
That's a question that you would have to ask the developer and their attorney.
Yeah.
She is a good attorney.
Yeah.
And she handles many zoning issues, applications, because I've done some research on her. So I can't answer that question.
Because as a neighbor in that area, I'm trying to get into their head to say, well, why would you take our area that we know for a fact we're already having so many issues with a two-lane road?
Yeah, I just think
you know, I am going to ask them, because I think all of us want, inquiring mind wants to know what was their reasoning behind singling that piece of property.
Yeah, I just think that when developers see empty parcels of land that are not yet developed, they look at it as a prime opportunity to make money. And people have a right to make money. And he has a right to develop that, as I said earlier, he has a right to develop the property as one-acre sites.
We would work with him if he did that.
But yes, because he'd be obligated by developing the site with the one-acre zoning. He'd have to manage the stormwater runoff on the site because, you know, to build up that site, the 14 acres, you'll have to build up the site above the roadway, which is...
So you flood other people's properties.
Which is 4 feet high.
Yeah.
And it will... I did a quick calculation of the acreage with the fill that would be required, and it's about 770 truckloads, dump truckloads of soil that would need to be put into the site to be able to raise it to the current code. And then when you raise it, then you're flooding all of the surrounding neighbors. And I welcome people to drive along Turtle Mound and White Road. White Road, it's two lanes and there's no parking on the side of the road. The road is not wide enough for you to park. And White Road is immediately adjacent to the property. During rush hour, particularly, Aurora and Turtle Mound is very busy, and we've had fatalities at that intersection. I'm at the corner of Turtle Mound and Lake Washington. When I moved here almost 10 years ago, I had to ask the county to install larger stop signs.
And they did it. I remember when you did that. Yeah, yep. It was because of you.
And the issue is, you know, we've got people in the ditches all the time with their cars at that intersection. So if you add in higher density traffic to what we already have, because Turtle Mound, or from Ugali to up Turtle Mound to Lake Washington to Wickham, is now a pass through, and especially since the growth that's come off of Ugali, so people are using that roadway up through Turtle Mound to Lake Washington as the pass through,
right.
And the traffic has grown, significantly.
Since we moved there.
In the last 10 years.
Well, I've been looking at, you know, where they have got these properties going up all in Palm Bay and Titusville, and Brevard County just doesn't have the infrastructure to support so many builders. And I really think it comes down to money. People want to make money, but hey, you've got to think about the residents who live there. And you've got to think about what are you bringing to our community? Are you bringing chaos to our community? Do we now have to look out for, you know, cars at the stop sign that people from other areas are coming into the neighborhood and don't know that area? It's crazy. I've seen people stop at the four-way stop sign and they don't wait. It's a lot to think about. So what can we do going forward to get our voices heard about this rezoning effort?
Well, on Thursday, July 9th, the Brevard County Commissioners, and there are five, one for each district of the commission, at 5 p.m., they will hold their meeting, and our community will arrive en masse with our color green shirts and dresses to show our unity to stop or protest the applications that will be before the county.
And what's the address where this is taking place for people to know where to show up to?
It is the Jameson Courthouse in Vieira.
Okay. All right. So we'll put that on our website.
Yeah, put that on the website.
We'll have Ellen do that. The other thing is, too, I mean, this is just the words of someone that I met at Publix the other day. And the lady was saying, well, you know, people work so hard to make their money to buy these houses out on Lake Washington Road. And enjoy the acreage. And to her, an older lady in her 80s, she said, you have to be careful what kind of people would be purchasing those homes too. She's like, are we going to allow like riffraff? And now I forgot about that word riffraff. I've never heard that for a long time. But people are concerned about if these townhouses were to go up, they would be significantly cheaper, I would think, than what we paid for our houses too.
Well, you know, I don't want to
discriminate.
I don't want to disparage any person who wants to live in our community. And I think it does a disservice to our community campaign about preserving the character of Lake Washington and the current zoning, right? By talking about that we don't want certain kind of people living in the community.
Yeah, I said to her, right? That's exactly what I said. Look, I don't think it's like they're building, because there's a rumor, like people are saying, well, what kind is it going to be? Affordable housing for Section 8. No, you've got to read about it. You can't just assume that somebody's coming into our area and bringing houses for people who are making, you know, less money or whatever it is. So I think we, as residents of that area, we also have to have a campaign to message that properly, because people are thinking, wait a minute, they don't want other people coming into their neighborhoods. And that's not so. We're saying, do the right thing.
It's really about the character of the community from a zoning perspective. So if you are a person, a working professional in working on the Space Coast, and you have the ability to purchase a home site with a 1 acre zoning and a home, then purchase that home and live there. But if from an affordability perspective, your budget only supports a townhouse, then purchase a townhouse in the communities where the zoning is proper.
Right.
Right? I mean, we want people to come to the Space Coast. We want to support business. We want to support economic development. But we want proper development, right, for the zoning, not to change the character of the community. And I would hope people would not come from a place of fear, but get involved, like we talked about earlier, and engage and learn and ask questions.
Diane, you are the best spokesperson for our group in Lake Washington, for our neighborhood, because you understand. And we moved in there just around the same time, but I love living in that area. I like the idea that we're close to everything, but we're not really so close. It's kind of like the best kept secret living in Lake Washington. You can get to Publix and the bank and all the shops, but then you go back home and you're in a rural area, which is really nice.
Absolutely. I mean, I have turtles on my property. I have bunnies. I have a hawk. My daughter Alyssa named our hawk Riley Hawk. You know, I saw an armadillo pass over across my driveway this morning. And people have horses and chickens and, you know, one of the young women who testified at the planning board meeting said, you know, I grew up on Palomino. This has been my home. I'm raising my young daughter. It is a magical place. And really, I'm getting chills just thinking about it.
Well, and here's the thing, too. You know, a lot of us, in order to build in that area, we have to have septic tanks. From what I understand, that area, they're going to be connected with sewer. They're going to be connected to the city if that's built.
I don't believe so. I'll have to look at the sewer upgrade map.
Yeah.
But our community is primarily all septic,
mm-hmm.
and you just have to overlay the septic upgrade map with the Indian River Lagoon. Like, I'm currently pricing out an updated septic system for my home, and I've gotten like 3 bids. Under the Indian River grant program, because we're all obligated to update our septic by 2030. And I want to leverage the funding that's available from the grant and really do the right thing to protect the lagoon.
Yeah, because the thing, you know, when we lived in Satellite Beach, you know, we did not have a septic tank. We had the sewer. And I'm not going to lie, I liked it. I didn't have the headache that I have now with the sewer, right, with the septic. And so I always want to know, like, when they're building out there, what kind of system are they going to have? Because that puts a strain on the infrastructure out there, too.
Yeah, I don't think, but we'd have to check. I don't think that the the sewer infrastructure is there to support in our community. Otherwise, I'm assuming at some point they would have done it. But you need a sewage treatment plant. You've got to lay all the miles of pipe, and the pipe have to be double walled. For leak detection.
And then
detection.
You ask yourself, who's going to be paying for all this?
Well, ultimately, if any community wants to put in sewers, and you're retrofitting, because we did this on Long Island when I was growing up in the town of Babylon, you've got to bond money. The municipality has to fund a bond or levy a bond, and the bond is paid through the taxpayers. So if the community does not want to deal with septic systems anymore, then ultimately the community has to get behind that we are willing to invest.
Look
in,
at her. She
in,
knows
in sewers.
She should be running for office too. We're going to have Diane Bowman-Moyenick on the city commission one of these days.
Well, thanks, Sita, but let me just get through this campaign first, right?
So there has to be, there's somebody sitting out there in Brevard County, Florida, that's seeing something going on in their neighborhoods, and they're sitting on their hands. And what would you say to that person that's sitting and saying, I want to do something, but I can't? What would you say to them?
Well, I think everyone should feel empowered to stand up and know that they have a voice, especially as a registered voter. I've been a registered voter my whole, adult life. And if you don't say anything, you really don't. If you're not registered to vote, as you said, you have no voice, and you never want to be on the menu. You want to be at the table.
Right. And how can someone contact you if they wanted to get involved with helping with this campaign?
Okay. So you can call my cell phone at 516-903-1107. That's 516-903-1107. Or you can email me at dbaumert@baumertpr.com, or search for my name or the website.
Or look for the two signs in front of my house.
Or my and signs, too.
And you have signs, too.
Yes.
You have signs to give out, too. I just want to say that, I have to commend you. This is amazing because you've done the research and you've gotten so many people behind you. And I will be there on the 9th, and I know Sharon is planning to come. We're going to wear green because I do feel strongly about preserving our community. And like we said, it's not like we don't want people to come into the community. For my old friend at Publix, it's go where you live the life you can afford.
Absolutely.
My father used to tell us, live the life you can afford.
Yes, absolutely, Sita. And we'll also be at on Wednesday night is wing night at Beef O'Brady's at the Lake Washington Shopping Center. So we will be there to collect signatures for our petition and also collect names for our community distribution list. And also if people want to sign the petition and lawn signs.
Danny. I tell you, I don't know if Danny's has enough time left for us, but we're going to say that Viewpoint with Sita and Friends will be back on air next Monday from 1 to 2. Diane Bowman-Moyenick, thanks for coming. And Dan Cicerelli for Florida House 31, thank you for being our guest. What a wonderful segment. And I hope I cleared up everything that our neighbors asked me to talk about. And I hope people tune into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends next week as well. This show can be downloaded from our website on WWBC, and Ellen will separate the two segments for both of you so you can have it. And thank you for sponsoring our show and being part of community radio. Sharon, thank you for being here to co-host. Allie, thank you for being here with us. And Danny, thank you for running our board. What a great show. I just love when the community can come together like this. See you next week.